BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's show. I'm Lisa Braden, presenter of this week's show from the radio studio at the British Empire and Commonwealth Museum at Temple Meads, Bristol. The museum is due to close in the autumn, so now is your chance to visit the museum's fascinating displays and see the current exhibition on slavery, called Breaking the Chains, before it moves up to London. The museum is next to Brunel's famous railway, so it's easy to find. For more details, log on to their website at www.empiremuseum.co.uk. In today's programme, we have members from the Renewal Gospel Choir to sing for us. Malcolm Grieve is in the studio to read us Thomas Chatterton's Abridged Will and Testament, Bristol's most famous poet, who died at the age of 17. We have a report from Tony Gosling, an interview about a charity that provides clean water for the villages in southern India, two poems from American poet from Kristen Powers, and Dialect's Jeff Spark for this weekly What's On. Now over to John Peters Coleman for the news.
Scotland Yard say assassinated Pakistani politician Benazir Bhutto was killed by a suicide bomber despite films showing her being shot. Several films show Benazir being shot three times by what appears to be a Western woman wearing sunglasses. After a gap of no more than a second after the final shot, there is a loud explosion nearby. Questions are being asked about why British police should be maintaining that the explosion killed Benazir when she can clearly be seen falling into her bomb-proof car before the explosion occurred. The postponed Pakistan election is due to be held in just over a week's time on Monday the 18th of February. Two British transport policemen say they've been threatened with the sack if they don't carry out more searches on members of the public. A Glasgow newspaper was shown evidence that British Transport Police Inspector Vincent Smith and Assistant Chief Constable Alan Pacey made the threats. The police whistleblowers say they've been forced to resort to stopping schoolboys, pensioners and even priests to make up a quota of searches they have to complete every day, and do not agree with the principle of searching with no reason or suspicion to stop someone. A packed meeting at Easton Community Centre in Bristol last week has heard about City Council plans to allow buses to use Bristol to Bath cycle path. The path follows the track of an abandoned railway, and local people say buses are not appropriate for what is seen as a much-needed wildlife and green space corridor into East Bristol. If Bristol City Council decide to press ahead with the plan, it looks likely to face stiff local opposition. More than 300 people packed the community centre to capacity, with many more outside. Over to Venezuela in South America now, an ex-officer from the US Marine Corps who says he was discharged for failing to shoot civilians in Iraq has told Venezuelan television that he and his friends are planning a revolution in the United States. Ex-Staff Sergeant Jimmy Massey said his superior, Captain Schwartz, told him that a day on which his patrol killed a lot of civilians was, quote, a good day, unquote. Massey is part of a growing group calling themselves Iraq Veterans Against the War, www.ivaw.org, who claim to have 600 ex-servicemen and 2,000 still-serving servicemen in their organisation. In his half-hour interview on Venezuelan television, Massey went into detail about US plans for Iraq, as he said he had been told in the United States Marine Corps briefings.
We will stay in Iraq until we bleed the Iraqis of all of their oil. And then we will move to Iran, Syria, and whoever else we think has oil or has natural resources that we can rape.
Do you think they would go so far as to take Venezuela's oil by force?
This is World War III. There are no rules. The rules went out the window September 11th.
Is this just your personal thing, or did someone actually tell you this as your time as a soldier?
My 12 years of intelligence briefings within the U.S. Marine Corps has led me to believe one thing. The U.S. has a quest for global domination. Marines are gangsters for capitalism. I say for all the people here in Venezuela that do not believe in President Chavez, you better start believing. The wolf is north of you. The media within the United States has blinded the American people. And the number one person that has blinded the Americans with propaganda is Bill O'Reilly, Fox News. Mr. O'Reilly is supposedly Irish, but I think he's more fascist.
How many ex-soldiers are in the organization, your organization?
We have approximately 600 active members that speak worldwide. And we have 2,000 members that are in reserve that are waiting for the revolution. The revolution has already began. It's just, when are we going to take it to the White House?
You're saying 600 soldiers that are already withdrawn, or are there still some that are active?
The 600 are already withdrawn, and a lot of the 2,000 are members that are still within the U.S. military. And we have members that even work within the National Security Agency in Maryland. We are surrounding them. It simplifies things.
Ex-U.S. Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Jimmy Massey there, talking on Venezuelan television about insurrection in the U.S. surrounding the neocons for starting what they see as the legal war in Iraq. Rupert Murdoch's Fox News channel comes in for special criticism. Jimmy, from Iraq Veterans Against the War, is author of the recently released book entitled Cowboys from Hell. That website again is www.ivaw.org.
Wake up to yesterday on BCFM. Midnight to midday, we repeat all the programmes so you can catch up on all the ones you've missed or just enjoy them again. BCFM 93.2 FM. Your choice, your voice.
2 weeks ago, we featured the poet Thomas Chatterton, a famous citizen of Bristol, who died at the very young age of 17. Not was originally thought from suicide, but an overdose of arsenic in an attempt to cure a venereal disease he caught in London. Malcolm Grieve is back to play the part of Chatterton as he reads his abridged will and testament.
Burgum, I thank thee. Thou hast let me see that Bristol has impressed her stamp on thee. Thy generous spirit emulates the mayor's. Thy generous spirit with thy Bristol's pairs. Gods, what would Burgum give to get a name and snatch his blundering dialect from shame? What would he give to hand his memory down to time's remotest boundary? A crown. Catcott, for thee I know thy heart is good. But ah, thy merits seldom understood. Too bigoted to whimsies which thy youth received to venerate as gospel truth, thy friendship ne'er could be so dear to me, since all I am is opposite to thee. If ever obligated to thy purse, Rowley discharges all, my first chief curse. For had I never known the antique lore, ne'er had ventured from my peaceful shore, to be the wreck of promises and hopes, a boy of learning and a bard of tropes. But happy in my humble sphere had moved, untroubled, unsuspected, unbeloved. To Barrett next, he has my thanks sincere for all the little knowledge I had here. But what was knowledge? Could it here succeed, when scarcely 20 in the town can read? Could knowledge bring in interest to maintain the wild expenses of a poet's brain? Disinterested Burgum never meant to take my knowledge for his gain per cent. And wildly squandering everything I got on books and learning and the Lord knows what, could Burgum then, my critic, patron, friend, without security, attempt to lend? Oh, that would be imprudent in a man. Accuse him of imprudence, if you can. He promised, I confessed, and seemed sincere. Few keep an honorary promise here. I thank thee, Barrett. Thy advice was right, but 'twas ordained by fate that I should write. Spite of the prudence of this prudent place, I wrote my mind, nor hid the author's face. Harris, ere long, when reeking from the press, my numbers make his self-importance less, will wrinkle up his face and damn the day, and drag my body to the triple way. This is the last will and testament of me, Thomas Chatterton, of the city of Bristol, being sound in body, or it is the fault of my last surgeon. The soundness of my mind the coroner and jury are to be the judges of, desiring them to take notice that the most perfect masters of human nature in Bristol distinguish me by the title of mad genius. Therefore, if I do a mad action, it is conformable to every action of my life, which is all savoured of insanity. Item. If after my death, which will happen tomorrow night before 8 o'clock, being the feast of the resurrection, the coroner and jury bring it in lunacy, I will and direct that Mr. Paul Farr, Esquire, and Mr. Joinflower, at their joint expense, cause my body to be interred in the tomb of my fathers. And if the said Paul Farr and John Flower have souls so Bristolish as to refuse this my request, they will transmit a copy of my will to the Society for Supporting the Bill of Rights, whom I hereby empower to build the said monument according to the aforesaid directions. And if they, the said Paul Farr and John Flower, should build the said monument, I will and direct that the second edition of my Kew Gardens shall be dedicated to them in the following dedication, to Paul Flower and John Parr. This book is most humbly dedicated by the author's ghost. Item. I give all my vigour and fire of youth to Mr. George Catcott, being sensible he is most want of it. Item. From the same charitable motive, I give and bequeath unto the Reverend Mr. Camplin Senior all my humility, to Mr. Burgum all my prosody and grammar, likewise one moiety of my modesty, the other moiety to any young lady who can prove, without blushing, that she wants that valuable commodity. To Bristol, all my spirit and disinterestedness, parcels of goods unknown on her key since Canning and Rowley. To direct, 'tis true, a charitable gentleman, one Mr. Colston, smuggled a considerable quantity of it, but it being proved that he was a papist, the Worshipful Society of Aldermen endeavoured to throttle him with the oath of allegiance. I also leave my religion to Dr. Cutts Barton, Dean of Bristol, hereby empowering the sub-sacrist to strike him on the head when he goes to sleep in church. My powers of utterance I give to the Reverend Mr. Broughton, hoping he will employ them to a better purpose than reading letters on the immortality of the soul. I leave the Reverend Mr. Catcott some little of my free thinking, that he may put on spectacles of reason and see how vilely he is duped into believing the scriptures literally. I wish that he and his brother George would know how far I am their real enemy, but I have an unlucky way of raillery, and when the strong fit of satire is upon me, I spare neither friend nor foe. This is my excuse for what I have said of them elsewhere. I leave Mr. Clayfield the sincerest thanks my gratitude can give, and I will and direct that whatever any person may think the pleasure of reading my works worth, they immediately pay their own valuation to him, since it is then become a lawful debt to me, and to him as my executor in this case. I leave my moderation to the politicians on both sides of the question. I leave my generosity to our present right worshipful mayor, Mr. Thomas Harris, Esquire, and I give my abstinence to the company at the Sir General Feast in general, more particularly the aldermen. Item. I give and bequeath to Mr. Matthew Meese a mourning ring with this motto, "Alas, poor Chatterton," provided he pays for it himself. Item. I leave all the young ladies all the letters they have had for me, assuring them that they will be under no apprehensions from the appearance of my ghost, for I die for none of them. Item. I leave all of my debts, the whole not £5, to the payment of the Charitable and Generous Chamber of Bristol, on penalty if refused to hinder every member from a good dinner by appearing in the form of a bailiff. If in defiance of this terrible spectre they obstinately persist in refusing to discharge my debts, let my 2 creditors apply to the supporters of the Bill of Rights. Item. I leave my mother and my sister to the protection of my friends, if I have any. Executed in the presence of omniscience this 14th of April, 1770, Thomas Chatterton.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Next feature by our intrepid reporter Anthea Page. The Hub is situated in King Street in Bristol and has been set up to provide economic spaces for small businesses to rent and network. This interview is with Katie Alcott about her charity Frank Water.
I'm Katie Alcott and I work for Frank Water. We work out of the Hub on King Street, which is an office for social enterprises. There's lots of different businesses who work out of here, and it's a great place to work from. Frank Water itself is a business, social enterprise, which I set up in 2005. The ultimate idea of it is to raise funds for clean water projects in India. And in the UK, what we do is we do sort of retail activities, which at the moment focus around the sale of bottled water. So we sell bottled water to lots of independent retailers, mainly in the Bristol area and in the southwest, but also all over the country. And our bottled water, which is called Frank, is basically we're a not-for-profit organisation, so all the profits that we get from the sale of the water fund clean water projects in developing countries. At the moment, we're working mainly in India. And the projects that we put in are very sort of technology-focused, so we use five separate filters in our facilities, which are community-owned and community-run facilities, providing clean water for 6,000 people at a time in each village that we work in.
So how did you become interested in the clean water project?
My initial interest was sparked from some work that I did in Jammu in Kashmir in India when I was 17. I worked in a community school there and I suffered amoebic dysentery myself and also saw a lot of effects of dirty water through the children in the school. So I would have been working there for maybe like 4 months and all of a sudden I'd see a new child arrive and I'd ask the teachers, you know, oh, is this a new addition to the school? And they'd say, oh, no, they've been with us for a long time. It's just they've had diarrhea for the last 4 months and they haven't been in. And we came across this all the time. And it just really shocked me. And then I continued to travel to lots of other continents and saw the same issues, whether it was sort of privatisation of water in places like Bolivia or continued sort of dirty water issues and illness through waterborne or water-related diseases in Africa and things, and always wanted to do something about it myself. Thought about doing development work, going out and working for someone like WaterAid or another sort of water-based charity to help provide clean water, but decided that actually it might be a better idea to set up a social enterprise in the UK which would fund clean water projects. So basically, rather than a charity where we're sort of begging for money, you're actually buying something that you want, and in return a percentage of that or all of the profits, but a percentage of the price that you're paying for it goes to the projects.
So how many villages have you managed to help so far in India?
So at the moment we've funded 4 projects in India, serving 6,000 people in each village. And we're almost coming to the end of our 3rd financial year now, so we're just about to find out how many projects we're going to have supported this year, which we expect to be about another 8 projects.
Do you work with Oxfam or totally independently of other aid organisations?
We Frank Water Projects became its own charity at the end of 2007. So now we are our own independent charity and we can put in, you know, do our own work. But ultimately we don't have the expertise on the ground with the projects. So we do work with other NGOs. So at the moment we work with directly with NGOs in the countries that we're working in, so we cut out the middleman effectively. Otherwise if we were just giving our money to WaterAid, then WaterAid would take their admin portion and then they'd end up contracting the work out to another NGO in Africa or India. So there's another portion that goes for admin. We're very much a kitchen table charity, so we take from the charity arm of our business, we have no administration costs, very, very little, just a basic sort of cost for doing the accounts really, and that's about it. We don't have any paid staff, everybody is a volunteer. And then we fund at the moment, we work with a local NGO in Andhra Pradesh in India. And all of our money goes straight into the projects. They don't take any administration charges.
So I think a lot of people out there would be interested in that because they worry sometimes that a lot of the money isn't getting to the right place or enough of it isn't getting to the people.
That's something that I was extremely aware of when I set up Frank, and something that I always wanted to do was to have direct link to every village that we worked with. And I think that's the advantageous point of Frank really, is that we go over every year and visit the villages and we double check that the projects are in, that the right amount of money that left our account has arrived over there and gone straight into the projects, and we have that level of contact and involvement with the projects.
So what's your website? Can people get onto the website and see for themselves what they could contribute or buy in the way of mineral water?
Yep, our website is frankwater.com, and on there it tells you quite a lot about the projects, and there's also all the products that we sell that fund the projects, and there's probably a link there as well to our charity website, which is being set up at the moment.
Katie Alcott talking about the charity she set up to provide clean water for villages in South India. Next week, Dalek's Anthea Page is off to India and hopes to visit one of the villages mentioned in that interview to see the valuable work that is being done to help the local people.
BCFM 93.2 FM. Your choice, your voice.
Alrighty, time to sling in a track now. This is a live recording recorded direct to 2-track at Headsound Studio in Michigan, late October, early November 1970 from the MC5. So the sound quality is not absolutely fantastic, but the energy I think will probably bowl you over. This is an underground kind of bootleg track and this is called Power Trip. Alrighty, thank you very much. That's the MC5 from an underground bootleg album I picked up off a mate called Motor City 5 Power Trip. MC5.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
It's time again for Kristen Powers to read two poems. Next week is Valentine's Day, and to celebrate this romantic occasion, Kristen is going to read two love poems. St. Valentine himself did not have a very romantic life. His name was Valentinus, from Valens, meaning worthy, and he was one of the early saints to be beheaded in Rome during the reign of Emperor Claudius I. The feast of St. Valentine was first decreed by Pope Gelasius. Don't let this put you off the chocolates and the red roses. The first poem is called How Do I Love Thee, written by Elizabeth Barrett, who spent many years as an invalid on a couch before eloping with Robert Browning to Italy. The second poem starts, But Thy Eternal Summer Shall Not Fade, and was written by William Shakespeare. To start off our romantic theme, we are going to hear a song from Caroline Nin, who was a great hit when she appeared at the Edinburgh Festival.
If the sun should tumble from the sky, if the sea should suddenly run out dry, if you love me, really love me, let it happen, I won't care. If it seems that everything is lost, I would smile and never count the cost. If you love me, really love me, then whatever happens, shall I catch a shooting star? Shall I bring it where you are? If you want me to, I will. You can set me any.
How do I love thee? Let me count the ways. I love thee to the depth and breadth and height my soul can reach when feeling out of sight for the ends of being an ideal grace. I love thee to the level of every day's most quiet need, by sun and candlelight. I love thee freely, as men strive for right. I love thee purely, as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion put to use in my old griefs, and with my childhood's faith. I love thee with a love I seemed to lose with my lost saints. I love thee with the breath, smiles, tears of all my life, and, if God choose, I shall but love thee better after death. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest, nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade. When in eternal lines to time thou growest, so long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
We're delighted to welcome in the studio today members of the 35-strong gospel choir called the Renewal Choir. Hello, Vernon, and welcome. What are you going to sing for us today?
Well, we're going to do a couple of pieces. One of them is going to be Great Is Your Faithfulness. And the other one is That's Why We're Praising. Something a bit uplifting. We're at the beginning of a new year. We want to give a little bit of a rise to all those people listening.
Excellent. Can you just tell me very, very quickly, because we haven't got that much time, how long you've been going and how, what you
well, we've been going about 2.5 years as a choir. We've steadily been growing. Almost by the month we get new members added to the choir.
Right.
And our name is Renewal Choir, and really it's about a new vision to push forward. I think everybody is challenged day by day, and it's great to be part of something that brings a bit of light respite to people and hopefully encourages them to try a little harder and do a little bit more from day to day. So it's a great choir. The youngest is 12 and the oldest is 21-ish, going on 50-ish, if you know what I mean.
I know what you're saying. if anyone's interested in getting involved with your choir, we've got contact details?
We do. We have a website, which is, somebody will correct me if I got it wrong, www.renewalchoir.org.
Okay. Fire away.
Vision.
That's why we praise him.
Okay.
BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Now we go from gospel to rock, and it's that time again. It's Jeff Sparks, What's On?
Thank you, Lisa. Good afternoon. This is your What's On guide from Dialect Radio. Let's start things off with Thursday, 14th of February, and at Moles Club in Bath, Fortune Drive will be headlining, along with support from The Vault and also First of the Giants. Doors open at 9 p.m. and entry is £4 for members, £4.50 for concessions and £5 for guests. Keeping with Thursday night, and at the Playhouse Theatre in Weston-super-Mare, Fairport Convention will be celebrating 40 years in the music business, and support comes from Anthony John Clark. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are £16.50 each. Moving on to Friday, 15th of February, and at the Cheese and Grain in Frome, the Wurzels will be performing with support from the Surfing Turnips. Doors open at 8 p.m. and tickets are £10 in advance and £12 on the door. Moving on to Song of the Week, and this week the honours go to Sun House, who was one of the greatest Delta Blues guitarists. This is from the album The Original Delta Blues, and there's a song called John the Revelator.
Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seventh seal. Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Well, who's that riding, John the Revelator? Wrote the book of the seventh seal. You know, God walked down in the cool of the day, called Adam by his name. And he refused to answer because he's naked and ashamed. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Who's that riding? John the Revelator. Who's that riding? John the Revelator wrote the book of the seventh seal. You know, Christ had 12 apostles, and 3 he led away. Say, watch with me 1 hour till I go yon and pray. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Wrote the book of the seven seas. Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Wrote the book of the seven seas. Christ came on the Easter morning. Mary and Martha was down to see. Go tell my disciples to meet me in Galilee. Tell me who's riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator. Wrote the book of the seventh seal. Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Who's that riding, John the Revelator? Tell me who's that riding, John the Revelator, or the book of the seventh seal.
That was Sun House with John the Revelator. For more information on him, you can go to www.wikipedia.org and type in his name. Moving on to Saturday, 16th of February, and at the Croft in Bristol, the Subhumans will be performing. Doors open at 8 p.m. and entry is £7 on the door. Finally, on Sunday, 17th of February, and at the Thekla in Bristol, the former musician from the Scorpions and also UFO, Michael Schenker, will be performing. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. and tickets are £15 in advance. Now that is all for me this week. Have a good week, take care, and goodbye.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
Malcolm Grieve takes us into the past with his musical reminiscences.
We were the people that we knew. I love the big house I knew, but why?
you on a trip. A trip down memory lane. This is a story of wild excesses of drugs, police harassment and fear and loathing in, Exeter. If the first of my musical journeys was indulgent, this one is positively hedonistic. Leaving school and going to university from a quiet town in South Bucks, even to such a small city, brought me into contact with a lot of new people. And of course their music. Well, I mean, in those days, no one stayed at home when they went to university. It was unheard of. I chose the furthest away that offered any course that I was interested in. We all did. It was a statement of independence. And when I went home after the first year, after admitting that I'd been thrown out, I announced rather portentously that I was leaving home, which elicited gentle laughter from my parents. So this time saw the creation of a new person, an independent free thinker, but nevertheless born most surely from the music that I listened to, from the excessive sincerity fueled by the tail end of progressive rock, into a dope-fueled haze where I whirled about the planet Gong with a motley bunch who eventually just ended up falling out. As Hawkwind said, the psychedelic warlords did indeed disappear in smoke. The bands at the tail end of progressive and acid music, Gong and the like, were tremendous musicians, and they created great soundscapes and mindscapes, which quite literally blew my mind. But they also represented a lifestyle which I latched onto fervently. I mixed this with US-style hippie music such as The Grateful Dead, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. It was an unholy mashup, but in my mind at least, Woodstock had never really ended. I'm sure I wasn't alone by any means. This was the time I discovered the delights of getting out of your head to see what you could see or discover. It was inherent in the lifestyle. It was a kind of travelling. And once again, it was the music that sent me on these journeys, whether Gong guided me through inner space, or Hawkwind through outer space, or the Grateful Dead through vast, open spaces. I'll never forget driving to Barnstable to see Here and Now in my 1968 Riley 1300 with the floor pan barely attached to the sills, and no brakes to speak of. We'd all taken loads of mushrooms before we set off. The roads in 1978 weren't well marked or lit, and headlamps didn't do too much either. So in the wilds of mid-Devon at night, you really felt like you were nowhere near civilization, even when you were straight. By the way, that means sober, for those of you born after 1975. And when you were coming up on mushrooms, well, you were halfway to Rivendell. So when we careened around a bend under thick trees in pitch darkness to discover the wild man of the woods standing in the middle of the road, remember, this is the A377, with his staring eyes, a huge beard, and a great yellow cloak on. Well, we nearly died of fright. We found out later that he was a local tramp of some repute, and the cloak was, presumably, his oilskin. Luckily, we missed him, and I hope his heart recovered from the shock, too. The gig was tremendous. I danced like a lunatic for hours. I guess he had to have been there. Of course, it would be all too easy to pretend that I indulged in the excesses famed of 60s rock stars. I didn't, and not many of us really did. But minor indulgence was a constant part of the lifestyle as much as the music. And there were many around who had gone further. I knew a guy who produced these paintings, fabulous fantasies with colours I've not seen before or since. He could barely look after himself, though, and his girlfriend took care of the mundanities. When I talked about wanting to take LSD to enhance my consciousness and tap into and release all that creativity I so greedily absorbed, a friend said to me, "Yes, acid can open doors in the mind." Then he looked at me. "But it tends to leave them propped open," he said, "and it gets a bit drafty up there." I took that as a kindly warning, and in the end I admit I never indulged. But I still remember those paintings. They were the pictures of where I went when the music took me. There were quite a few bands there, a small city music scene, though naturally there was only ever one drummer. Looking back, he must have been pretty fit, really. Of course I wanted to join in, but I could never play too well, and remained content to jam around with folks, setting up a riff on the bass, and letting the soloist let rip. We met regularly in the house I rented, and got quite close at one point to a decent version of Caravan's 9 Feet Underground, with remarkably little instrumentation, just a nylon strung guitar, electric bass and bongos. I guess he had to have been there. It wasn't all pure hedonism. The music and everything else led to some profound experiences. I remember putting my hands on a tree and feeling it grow. Yeah, I know, what a fruitcake. But it was a deeply moving, mystical feeling which I still get when deep in nature, in the forests and hedgerows. But the significance is that it had a soundtrack. The Grateful Dead's Weather Report suite describes it perfectly in the words and in the feeling of the music. It's only been equalled recently by watching my son grow and thinking, how on earth did we make that? Though of course, the soundtrack to that is just the sound of his own laughter. There was a lot of radical thinking around. Anarchy wasn't invented by the Sex Pistols, and we weren't aligned along the Marxist axis either. A lot which underpins more recent green politics, alternative technology, alternative economic viewpoints, was very much in evidence in the 1970s. And they weren't new ideas then either. Potted pixies and floating anarchy were important, but they were very mind-centric and personal, whereas I kind of believe that overall the hippie philosophy, if you could pin it down at all, was the blueprint for a whole new world. But it was always the music that defined who I was turning myself into, the sounds, the words, the philosophies. In that sense, there was a direct continuity of bands like Genesis and Supertramp being the soundtrack to my school day rebellions. This time, though, it all began to gel into an overall life plan, though I don't know I could truly call it coherent, and please, please don't ask me to define it now. I can't. I really can't. But it was real then. The music told me so.
What shall we say? Shall we call it by a name? It's well to count the ages dancing on the dead. Water bright as the sky from which it came. And the name is on the earth that takes it in. We will not speak but stand inside the rain. Listen to the thunder shout.
Well, that's the end of this week's Dalek Radio Show from the British Empire and Commonwealth Museum at Temple Meads, and broadcast from BCFM on Monday the 10th of February at 9 p.m. With us in the studio today were members of the Renewal Choir Bristol, the actor Malcolm Grieve, the poems were read by Kristen Powers, and the features were by reporters Tony Gosling and Anthea Page. Jess Parks did the What's On, the studio engineer was Village Tichikurin, and the presenters were Lisa Braden and myself, John Peters Coleman. Next week in the studio, I will be in the studio to present the show. We will have an interview with two guests from the Granary Club, and an interview with the artist Duncan Brothers, whose colourful and dramatic paintings, which are mostly based on current affairs, are currently on show at the Spyglass Gallery on Washback, near Queen Square. I'll be interviewing John Wadsworth on Life's Alchemical Journey. We will have our regular features from Tony Gosling, Jeff Sparks and Kristen Powers. The producer of this week's show was Anthea Page. Goodbye and have a good week. Take it easy.